FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Financial Survival Network is brought to you today by Orin Resources, a junior exploration company with the appetite of a major. It's hot on the trail of the next globally significant discovery, creating enormous potential upside for you, the shareholder. Orin is one of the most aggressive exploration companies pursuing high-grade, scalable gold and copper deposits and has a premier seven-project portfolio, including its two flagships, Committee Bay in the Arctic and Sombrero in Peru. Orin's unparalleled technical team and highly experienced management has a history of success in advancing and monetizing exploration assets. No wonder Orin's been called one of the best in the junior exploration sector. Orin trades on the TSX and the NYSE under AUG. To learn more, go to orinresources.com. That's AURYNResources.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 3/18/2019. Hope everyone had a great St. Paddy's Day. Not Irish, but I'm honorary Irish since I have an Irish first name. We were out there partying in West Palm Beach and Palm Beach last night. It was a blast. Got home late, so it's a good thing that I do this job where I can start at 11 o'clock in the morning because I needed all of my beauty sleep for sure. Hey, Will, how's your portfolio been doing? What are you thinking of precious metals? What about the cannabis stocks? And what about China and everything else that's going on in the world? Cryptos, are they going to make a comeback? Good question. Well, first, as always, if you got an opinion on any of these subjects, write to us. KL@KerryLutz.com. We answer all. We read all. Might not do it as quickly as we'd like, but we do get to everyone eventually. And somebody who I've known for a number of years did an event with him. He was really outstanding, really knowledgeable, great speaker, and all around Renaissance, man. I'm talking about you, Jerry Robinson. Followthemoney.com. And as always, welcome. So, Jerry, we're looking at gold broke 1300 again. It's up for the day. If memory serves me correct, it was up about $3 the last time I looked. What is the case for precious metals, for or against? Right now, I should say it's right at 1305. And it's up about almost $3 the ounce. Silver's up 11 cents, 1537. So what's the case for and against precious metals?
You bet. Well, definitely four. I'll say that up front. And yeah, as far as gold and silver, precious metals, I've been a permabull on this particular market, although I am a trend trader. So I have a core position in gold and silver that I'm just never going to sell. Well, I take that back. There probably is going to be a moment in the future where it will make sense to sell gold and silver, but that is going to be some time out into the future. And you can always build the case for taking the gold and silver ratio and then adjusting your holdings based upon how that ratio looks. So I don't want to say never sell, but what I do want to say is that I have long been a bull on the entire space, mainly because of the same reason that most other fundamental guys would be, and that is the outrageous amount of spending that the United States government is doing. The global economy, of course, is wildly over-leveraged. You and I both lived through the 2008 economic crisis. The same problems that were plaguing us prior to that crisis are now, more pronounced than ever. And we're talking specifically about that four-letter word, and that's debt. So they can tell us that they've put in safeguards. The Fed can tell us that they've done this. We can hear from the Treasury Department that they're certainly well capitalizing the banks and making sure that they have plenty of reserves. But in the end, it all boils down to something called debt. And when you have too much of it and not enough income and too much outflow like we currently have, you're simply going to run out of suckers to sell your, you know, to sell your wares to. And so in this case, we see gold certainly being a primary beneficiary of these poor monetary policies, poor economic policies, poor fiscal policies. President Trump just unveiled a $4.7 trillion spending plan for 2020. I mean, this is a bad joke on America. $4.7 trillion that he's going to be spending in 2020. Now, the fact that this budget is going to go through as is highly unlikely. But nevertheless, it shows us once again that it doesn't matter who you put in office. It does not matter who you put in office. They're going to spend like a drunken sailor because that's all Americans know how to do. The Chinese save and the Americans spend. It doesn't matter if they're R's or D's or L's or whatever you want to call them. They're going to spend lots of money. So $4.7 trillion. And how much money are we going to take in, Kerry? We're going to take in $3.6 trillion. So that means we're going to have a $1 trillion deficit, not only in 2020, but also 2021 and projected out to 2022. And then, of course, the government tells us that it's going to start really starting to become more fiscally responsible after that, like they always tell us. But we project our own analysis. We suggest that we're going to see $1 trillion deficits from now on. There's just simply no other way to finance the kind of spending that this government wants to spend. And it's just no other way. So that bodes well for gold. Now, technically speaking, when you take a look at a chart of gold, you'll see that things got bullish back in December whenever the price of gold pierced above the 200-day moving average line. That's a really important metric for hedge funds. It's a really important metric for fund managers and for investors in general who are savvy to technical analysis. But the 200-day moving average was retaken after kind of failing at that area back in June. We took it in December, and since that time, we've been holding up fairly well. We still have tremendous overhead resistance at the 1350 all the way up to about the 1380 area. I think you'll see a lot of excitement generally in the gold space and the gold investing space if we are able to break out above that resistance, that ceiling, up to really about 1380. That's the key number that we're looking at, 1350 to 1380. We break out above that, I think you're going to see quite a bit of money flowing in to the space. There's quite a bit of money still on the sidelines. And by the way, central bank gold demand, which is quite ironic because the central banks are, you know, overall constantly telling us that paper is the only way forward. When you take a look at what they actually do with their money, central bank demand in 2018 was the highest since President Nixon closed the gold window, with net purchases reaching 651 tons. That was a 74% increase year over year. That's the second highest annual total on record. And meanwhile, the central banks are telling us that all is fine. We don't have, you know, much in the way of problems going forward. Everything's manageable. So gold, we think, is going to break out. Now, the big question is when. Well, the very first thing that I would suggest is that 1350 to 1380 range has to be broken. So until that happens, you know, I'm going to be holding my core position and looking to add. But when we break out above that area, Kerry, I'll be getting very aggressively bullish.
Yeah. And that's the magic number, that 1350. Some people say it's 1363. Let's just call it 1400 to be on the safe side, because I like whole number. Not so much that they mean anything in terms of cycles, but psychology, right?
Sure.
It's all about psychology. And those big numbers, round numbers, carry certain properties that
absolutely right.
1363 just doesn't have, and even 1350. But 1400 is meaningful. It's kind of like when you're watching the odometer go by on your car, and you don't notice the miles, but just the other day, my car hit 40,000 miles, and it was four zeros after it. And that I noticed. And one thing I noticed was on February 13th at 2:13, gold hit 1313, $1,300, $1,313 and 13 cents. And I don't think it was a Friday the 13th, but I thought that was an interesting formation. It probably means nothing, but it's interesting nonetheless.
Well, about that same time, Kerry, less than 3 months after they had wound up their last major round of monetary easing, the ECB announced it was going to launch new QE. And so that's really interesting that just less than a month ago, or actually just a, you know, just a handful of days ago, we actually had this issue where the ECB is talking about launching brand new stimulus, giving money out to banks. And the Fed, of course, meeting this week as well. And we don't expect them to start launching QE right this second, but we think it's on the cusp. And we know what happened last time the Fed launched QE to gold.
Yeah. Well, they've already said it seems to be consensus now, no interest rates for 2019.
There you go. That's
so
right.
if you're not raising, then inevitably you're going to start cutting. It's just the way that it works with these guys. So, and they've got to bring down the interest expense to the U.S. Well, obviously something's got to give here, Jerry. You can't run up these debts indefinitely and not expect the system to react in some way, which it hasn't yet. But we know in all likelihood it's going to. Solutions, you know, there won't be any until there's a crisis, just the way it works. So let's move on to cannabis stocks. So we've got legalization probably coming, I heard, in New Jersey. It's going to be next. It's going to be
right.
Big. And New York. And it's already legal in Massachusetts, but I don't think they've got dispensaries yet. Probably Connecticut. Probably Delaware, Maryland. Got to believe the East Coast is going to fall next, up to the South. You know, Florida is just not quite ready to take that step yet, but I'm sure they will be. Texas will probably be among the last. Utah. But nonetheless, Alaska went legal. So if Alaska went legal, a thoroughly red state, because no blue person in their right mind, you can't get a suntan in Alaska. They just aren't going there. You know, what do we see for the stocks here? Because, look, the stuff doesn't grow on trees. It grows on vines, I guess, or stalks. So you can grow as much of the stuff as you need, pretty much. I mean, when they start plowing under the wheat fields to do cannabis, and we have a wheat shortage because they're growing too much cannabis, then we'll know, I guess, huh?
Well, let's keep that in mind, too. I mean, remember, this stuff does come out of the ground. So it really is, cannabis is really just a commodity. I mean, when we really boil it down. The thing about cannabis, though, is it has so many different uses, so many different use cases. And it also has so many different properties that you're going to have some very different kinds of applications. Whereas, you know, maybe coffee is pretty straightforward. You drink a cup of coffee. What else are you going to do with it? However, with cannabis, there's quite a few different applications in many different markets. And so, so I think it's a little different than a commodity in that respect, or a regular commodity. But when we look at the overall potential size of this market, we're talking, you know, $200 billion, according to one research firm, Deloitte & Touche. We're talking about the total global medical and recreational cannabis use. Could be talking about $200 billion. You know, much of that growth is expected to come as legal cannabis disrupts the beverage industry. Coca-Cola is already looking at this space. Pepsi is too. The tobacco space, they're looking, you know, they got declining revenues. Altria is already making bets in this particular space. And then you also have the big pharma industries. You know, they're already getting involved. And then you have the alcohol space. I mean, Constellation Brands. Yeah. You also have
Heineken.
Molson Coors getting involved with another company. So you have a lot of big money kind of lining up here. And then you also have new methods of ingestion. You know, most people think of the old,
Cheech and Chong.
Cheech and Chong.
Pass the bong. Pass the bong.
And then there's legal fears around that. There's social stigmas about that. In fact, when you go back and you really look at the root of these cannabis laws, you'll find out that the people really weren't worried about your health. If they were worried about your health, they try to get soda out of the, there was a new headline in Wall Street Journal this week says soda actually causes all these different cancers. Well, you know, where are the moral guardians out here telling us that we shouldn't drink soda, right? Or even alcohol. You know, Carrie, right now I can drive down to the local liquor store. You know what I can do? I can buy as much liquor as I want to. Did you know that? I can buy as much liquor as I want to. There is no limit. And then I could sit there outside on the sidewalk and drink myself to death, okay? And you know what? Nobody's going to care. Nobody. There's no moral guardian that's going to come out and say, we got to shut down the liquor store, right? So I can literally kill myself with liquor, but I cannot grow a plant in my backyard that cannot do damage to me. Really quite staggering. Yeah, I think the new generation is rising up and they're saying, now wait, just a cotton pick in a minute. what's this all about? And you know what? It is about that cotton picking, because we go back and we take a look at Henry Anslinger, who was the first commissioner of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics
and Dangerous Drugs. Yes, correct.
And he tells us right before Congress, let me quote Mr. Henry Anslinger, the first commissioner of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics. He says marijuana is the most violence causing drug in the history of mankind, because most marijuana smokers are Negroes, Hispanics, Filipinos, and entertainers. And he goes on. He's not done yet. He says reefer, which is the slang word for marijuana, makes the darkies think they're just as good as white men. So the primary reason Mr. Anslinger says we should outlaw marijuana, you ready for it? Not health, none of these other things, no morals, because of its effect upon the degenerate races. These are racist laws. They certainly target minorities extremely harshly. And for individuals who see this, they realize what this is. They realize this is not about health. This is not about public health. We certainly don't want to see cannabis sold to children. I mean, I'm a Christian. Not. I mean, I'll be quite frank with you. I'm a Christian. I believe the Bible. So I'm not chomping at the bit to see cannabis in children's hands. But what I am suggesting is that, you know, if you're worried about morals, then worry about other things, because cannabis has killed no one up to this point. Therefore, I think you're going to see a mind shift and a sea shift here. And as that happens, there's going to be a lot of money made as we make this shift. And so we've positioned ourselves early. We've already put out a report on this. We've got several stocks that we are already well in. We told our members about. We like the space. We see this being a 5 to 10 year play, and it could provide massive gains if you're properly positioned.
Yeah, that's the big if. You need to be properly positioned. Hey, another reason why Anslinger was so gung-ho on banning reefer, and the movie Reefer Madness was from that era as well, was because prohibition was ending. You had all these government employees who were in the enforcement division enforcing the war on alcohol, and all of a sudden they had no jobs. They were going to have no jobs. So this was a way to keep the federal workforce working, if you want to call it working, doing unbelievable destruction to lives and property and society as a whole. But this was part of the ploy, the plan.
Absolutely. And, you know, when we take a look at cannabis itself, it sits on the FDA Schedule 1, which, you know, associates it with things like heroin and LSD. I mean, I've known guys who've taken LSD. I know guys who's taken heroin. I tell you what, it's nothing similar at all to marijuana. So simply, if we don't get a descheduling of cannabis from the FDA, just a rescheduling. I mean, Schedule 2 on the FDA has stuff like crystal meth and PCP and cocaine. Yeah. I mean, you would expect at least marijuana could be lowered to that level. And a rescheduling would be massive, because it would allow research. It would allow a lot more to go on with this industry. So I think a rescheduling at the very least is going to happen by the 2020 election. And then possibly a descheduling, which would be the best of all worlds for investors.
Yeah, for sure. And it looks like it's going to happen. Trump is in favor of it. I think Congress is going to come along, because it's a revenue opportunity. I don't see the tax revenue as being a particularly compelling case. It's going to chip in way less than liquor. When I see what states have done with legalization, probably the best states are Colorado and Washington State. Business is booming, and it's a legitimate part of the economy. I'd say Nevada shortly thereafter. The worst job by far is the People's Republic of California, which legalizing 38 million people in the state where it's going to revolutionize the market, and they've so overtaxed it and overregulated it and really botched everything, which is what you expect in blue states. They've really taken literally the gold watch and turned it into horse manure. You know,
that's true. That's true. But remember, California really is the trendsetter and everything. Whatever happens out there tends to make it out to the middle mm-hmm. states, you know, 20 years later. And I think it's the same case with cannabis. Right now, there's hardly any kind of brand awareness, let alone mm-hmm. brand loyalty in the space. I think 10 years from now, Kerry, many of us will have brands that we think are the best. I mean, we can certainly walk into a liquor store and you kind of have some snobbery with the wines, you have snobbery with the beers. People say, oh, yeah, I like this particular, I like Heineken, or I like Coors, or I like mm-hmm. Budweiser, or I like, you know, whatever, you know, and because we've been told what to like. And I think that has not yet happened with cannabis. Therefore, the savvy investor who can identify those brands early, I think they're coming out of California too, and certainly out of Canada, which mm-hmm. has a huge head start, by the way, because of our backward laws here in the United States. Canada has a huge head start. Many of the cannabis plays.
Yeah, no pun intended, but
we've been focused upon the Canadian plays. They've been locking up markets overseas. They're locking up Europe. They're locking up Asia. They're locking up South America. Meanwhile, the United States has still got it scheduled like heroin and LSD. Really quite stunning.
Yeah, quite backward and really just out of touch with reality. But old laws, you know, Jerry, old laws die hard.
They die hard.
And this is a perfect example of such. And we're just going to have to see. But the trend is the trend. The trend is fully underway. And as a practical matter, it's impossible to legalize it in one state, like, or in a bunch of states. We're up to 10 now. Michigan legalized last election. It's impossible to legalize it in 10 states and not legalize it effectively throughout the country, because the whole dynamics of distribution have been stood on their head. Now people buy in one state and they ship it off to another. You've got a lot more intrastate smuggling or interstate smuggling than international smuggling. And the whole market has changed totally. Hey, so cryptos, I predicted back in December of 2017 that Bitcoin was going to crash.
Nice.
I knew it was going to. Got rid of mine. And that, unfortunately, it was at 15,000 when I made that call. And now, you know, it's struggling to hit 4,000. My prediction is before it ever goes up again, and I don't believe that it's going to, not Bitcoin. I think there's a new generation of cryptos coming that will be far more robust, less subject to manipulation, and less subject to blockage, which Bitcoin is. Whether anyone likes it or not, I don't care. But, you know, it's going to go to 2,000. And, you know, what it does from there, I don't know. But I'm not real bullish on Bitcoin itself, although I am bullish on the future of cryptos when 2.0 comes out, which probably they're working on it now. Probably won't be long.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe we have a slight difference of opinion there. I think Bitcoin will inevitably still be around and probably do very, very well in the next bull run. If you take a look at the pattern here with cryptocurrency, the history in 2013, you had a massive bull market that began in cryptocurrencies. That's when I noticed the space. I was tipped off by a fellow, the guy who was at your summit that Trace Mayer. Yeah. So he was telling me behind the scenes, hey, you got to buy. This is back in 2012. So I started getting in dollar costing, averaging into cryptos back then. And, you know, and it was a big, massive bull run. And then a market crash in 2014. Everybody got burned. Everybody, you know, decided to throw in the towel, except for the hodlers. And then we had the same similar pattern play out in 2017, massive crypto bull market, and then it smashed to pieces in 2018, big 80%, you know, wiping off of the values of these prices. I don't know when the next bull market is in cryptos. I think it's a boom bust market for sure. And agreed. I think when the speculators are ready to drive it back up, they will. And that's exactly what happened the last few times. So I think it's a similar market to some other markets as well in that respect. So I think you're going to see more boom bust cycles in it. I think you'll have price distortions for sure. I agree with you that their prices are not always accurate. As you know, they're probably going to be overpriced many times and underpriced other times. But I think overall, what cryptocurrencies represent is the blockchain. And the blockchain is the fundamental change in technology. I mean, we've seen this over and over and over again. You know, I remember the president of Western Union back in 1876 saying this telephone has too many shortcomings to be seriously considered as a means of communication. You know, Ken Olson back in 1977 says there's no reason why anyone would want a computer in their homes. The inventor of the Ethernet back in 1995 predicted that the internet would soon, you know, spectacularly supernova and catastrophically collapse. And even, you know, Joseph Stiglitz, the famous Nobel laureate economist, last year said that Bitcoin should be outlawed because it doesn't serve any social function. I see this as a time of accumulation. I believe there's another massive buying wave on the horizon. And my own approach to this has simply been to strategize, which means I'm deciding what I want to invest in. I'm doing my due diligence. I'm investigating. I've certainly taken more positions in some of these newer altcoins you're talking about. I'm attracted by the risk reward potential on some of these. Secondly, I execute. I go out and I buy them. And I like to buy them in times like this where you have a general malaise and everybody hates cryptos. And then thirdly, I'm being patient. So I think that patience is going to win the day here with cryptos. We're so early on the curve. And even though we've had these spectacular bull markets and then busts, I think the biggest bull markets for cryptos still lies ahead. And I think that's because the world still fully doesn't understand what this really represents, what the fundamental changes that are going to be emerging out of this technology. So we like Bitcoin. We've been in Bitcoin, you know, since 2013, Ethereum and Ripple, Litecoin. One of the ones that we got into at a really great time was just after it was released was Tron. That was one that came out and it's now in the top 15 or so. It's really dominating Asia. We got into that one whenever it was, you know, a fifth of a penny or whatever it was, trading for something absurd. Now it went up to like 25 cents in 2018, but it's come back down. I think it's trading around 2 or 3 cents. We like Tron. There's several other coins like that that we tell our members about that we're currently invested in. I see, again, another boom coming. I think now is the time to be accumulating very prudently, very cautiously, doing your due diligence, not buying because somebody says, but instead recognizing that, hey, you know, if I want to spend a little bit of time on this, I could really benefit and profit from the next boom.
Yeah, well, you could be right. My concern about Bitcoin is technological and security limitations. There's only 7,000 Bitcoin nodes in the world, and a large chunk of them are in China. If the Chinese decide they don't like this market, do you think any of those nodes that are left in China will be left standing? It's too hard to anonymize your nodes with the government surveillance that's going on. They can track Bitcoin traffic and neutralize those nodes, either physically send in a team to knock it over, or with various malware, et cetera. There's a thing called eclipsing the node, where it's basically a DOS, denial of service attack. It's been documented. It can be done. It doesn't do you any good to do one of them, but if you can physically take out any number of nodes and then maliciously disable the rest, guess what? All you got to do is do it for 2 days, and that cryptocurrency will cease to exist because all confidence will be lost. That's my concern about it. Look, Jerry, you know as well as I know, we started out this discussion talking about deficits. And how do they cure deficits? They print money. And what's the greatest threat to a sovereign? What is the greatest power that a sovereign country has? Is the ability to print money. And any threat to that, when it's finally perceived as such, if it isn't already, is going to be met with the iron fist of government. So I don't see it as being as foolproof as everyone claims it has. And it relies on a network, a functioning network. So we'll see who's right or wrong over time. My feeling is it's going to go down another 2,000 to 2,000, because originally I predicted 3880, that was the resistance point. And when it broke that earlier, late last year, and it went down to 3,200, seemed to me that the resistance for going lower wasn't there. And, you know, there was no resistance, and it's going to go lower before it goes higher. But hey, we'll see what happens. But I do agree with you about the future of cryptos. But unfortunately, I believe it's going to be the next generation of cryptos that become dominant, not this one. And nobody, unfortunately, knows what that next generation is. So anyways, finally, we got a minute or two, and one topic you wanted to brush upon was China. So what's the deal with China? You know, where is the Chinese economy heading? And are they going to take over the world?
China's been the largest economy in the world for a very, very long time. And that only changed back in the 1800s. So there was a period of time, even at the height of the British Empire, if you take a look at total GDP in China, and even India for that matter, you'll find that even at the greatest point of the West during colonization and whatnot, China still had a larger overall GDP, as did India, especially when you combine them together. So the East is really where the future is. And many people in the West don't understand that. They haven't been over to Asia. They haven't seen it with their own eyes. They don't understand what's happening. And so they're living in this bubble where they hear the Washington talking points in a propaganda every single day. China bad, U.S. good, China communist, you know, United States not, capitalist, which is a big joke. The U.S.-China trade deal has been delayed at least until April. And so that's given a little bit of breathing room here. But some of the obvious things that we can see here is that if you look at China on a GDP PPP basis, just on purchasing power, you'll find out they're the largest economy in the world today. In fact, that's been that way for the last 5 years. So China is actually the largest economy in the world if you take away the silly nominal GDP and you actually focus on real purchasing power. The United States knows this. The United States woke up to this threat late. And so now you see that the United States, you know, especially Trump realizes this. Obama realized this with his pivot to Asia. They're desperately trying to get ahead of the curve, and they can't. You see this with the 5G technology right now, where you have, you know, the U.S. threatening its own allies if they work with China. Because why? Because China might spy through the 5G technology. You got to be kidding. I mean, Washington is the number one spy in the whole world. So it's like, you know, throwing stones with a glass house. So the idea here that the United States is going to be able to compete with China 5, 10, 20 years down the road is nonsense, we believe. We believe that China is going to dominate, not necessarily straight up. If you remember, look, United States had a Great Depression back in 1929. By 1944, it was the total largest economy in the whole world. But by the way, the 40s were the peak for the United States. I mean, that was the height. Now, we have never been higher since that time on a total global GDP. And so China may go through a Great Depression. People talk about the empty cities. They talk about the empty buildings, whatever. I mean, we may actually move into a place where we see a total breakdown of China. Fine. Yeah. I'll be buying that moment. That'll be China's Great Depression. But I still believe that over time, China is going to certainly become more Americans will be more aware of what China represents. I think we're still behind the curve now. And I think by the year 2050, 2060, that India will actually surpass China. Yeah. And I think you'll see India being the major player, kind of taking the crown later on. So we're living in the 21st century, which I believe is the Chinese century, without any shadow of a doubt in my mind. And that toward the end of this century, India is actually going to be the taking the crown from China.
Yeah, well, it's a little worrisome to think that China being the dominant power in the world, because you know, there's nothing in the Chinese system that really exalts the individual, elevates the individual. It's all about the state, and it's all about, you know, the empire, effectively. And I won't say that the U.S. is much different at this point in time.
The U.S. is all about the corporation, basically. The corporation is the top entity.
Of course, but there's still the aspirations of many of us, you, I know, and myself, that to reassert the right of the individual, to make the individual supreme, and all the other institutions of society serve the individual to protect him or her and the free market, etc. We still share those aspirations. The Chinese, the other systems out there don't. And Western civilization was kind of founded on that ability to evolve as an individual to the most you can be, at least in theory. I mean, that's the philosophy. So that's what worries me about seeing a country like China, because I've been there before and it seems pretty joyless there to an outsider. Not that there aren't plenty of places in the U.S. that are joyless. But
Kerry, I mean, we're the ones popping pills and killing ourselves. Oh. I mean, we're one of the most unhappy nations on the planet. And we think we have everything.
It's not that we're the most unhappy. It's like we look for these externalities to take away our unhappiness. And I think that most other people in the world, like basically mental illness and personality stuff, disorders, I think it's just a form of decadence that we gotten to this point that this is what we worry about, because we don't have to worry about feeding ourselves anymore, don't have to worry about making money because the government will take care of you. So the only thing you have left to think about is your misery and how to get rid of it. And you know, that's the way I see it there. But I'm not saying that our system is perfect or superior. It's just that it's individually centric. And that's where I see the failings of maybe India is more like that. But China, it's never about the individual in China. And that's my main concern about the whole thing, about their rise. But I agree with most of what you're saying. The only thing I will say is, like, Yogi Berra is often credited with saying, and I'm not sure that he did, prediction is very tough, especially about the future. So,
that's Mark Twain, actually.
Yeah, Mark Twain, but then it got credited to Yogi. But anyways,
and I think all the prognostications we can live or live without, I think ultimately when it all boils down, you know, all you can trust is price and volume. And that's why I'm a trend trader. You know, that's correct. Why I focus right on the charts. But of course, we can always, it's fun to prognosticate. It's fun to look out, like you say, but you're right. I mean, you know, who knows in the end?
Who knows in the end, but trend in motion stays in motion until it stops.
That's
right. The problem is most people can't figure out when it's stopping, and then you get killed in the process. Anyway, Jerry, followthemoney.com. What else do we need to know about what's going on in the site?
Sure, no problem. Well, you know, as far as people coming to the site, you go there, we have, you can go to followthemoney.com and you can enter your email address and we'll send you automatically our top 10 trading rules. I'll give you an hour-long teaching for free that I did on the world's top traders. So if you're interested at all in trading for profit, trend trading, if you like the topics of cannabis or China or cryptos, you know, we have reports on those topics. We do a podcast that you can get for free, and we have different memberships. You know, you can become a member of our community. We have a growing, vibrant community. We put out trading alerts in real time on our private Twitter page. So you can find out all that information right there at followthemoney.com. And it's been a pleasure being on your program, Kerry. Hey, I really appreciate it.
Always good to have you on. We'll have you on again real soon. Any questions, comments, email us, kl@kerrylutz.com, Twitter feed @KerryLutz, if anybody uses that thing anymore, Facebook, pretty soon that'll be gone. So just if you're listening to the podcast or you're watching it on YouTube, please subscribe, like, and share. Really helps me a lot when you do that. Helps get the message out, like what you just heard from Jerry Robinson about what's really happening in the economy, not what the state-run media tells you is happening. And that is about the most important thing, to really get some kind of sense of what is going on, because then you can plan and hopefully get through whatever changes are coming intact or perhaps better than ever. Jerry, we'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Kerry, for having me on.
FSN Radio. It's all about what
Next.
Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports.
The Financial Survival Network.
It's all about what's next.